I'm Frances Guy, and I'm the head of collection and exhibitions at the Hepworth Wakefield.
Okay, so we're at the William Scott exhibition. I suppose, first and foremost, why William Scott and why now?
It's an interesting question because this exhibition came about when Sarah Whitfield, who's an art historian, who's been working with the Scott estate on the catalogue Resonne, came to visit our collection because we have a Scott, a William Scott, which was acquired for the collection in the 1950s. So she came to see it, as she has travelled extensively across this country and abroad to see the Scots in public and private collections. And at that time, she, I think this was shortly after we'd opened in 2011, she said that there were plans to mark the Scott centenary, the centenary of his birth, in 2013 with an exhibition. And she said that at that time, they hadn't clearly identified who the partners in that exhibition might be. And I said that I thought we would probably be quite interested to find out more, because William Scott, although not a contemporary of Barbara Hepworth, he was born exactly 10 years earlier than Hepworth, later than Hepworth. They were both known as pioneers of abstract art in Britain, Hepworth obviously for sculpture and Scott for painting. And it seems like a really good fit. So Sarah kept in touch, and then we were contacted by Tate and Chris Stevens, and who works at Tate Britain, and Sarah Matson, who works at Tate St Ives, and they contacted us as the originators of this William Scott exhibition and invited us to participate, and we jumped at the chance.
Okay then, so I mean, William Scott is, I suppose, quite a strange painter in the sense that his reputation since his death has kind of dwindled. And I was wondering if, as a curator, you kind of feel a responsibility to almost rebuild that reputation?
Partly, I suppose, because I think there's a real fascination now for that period of 20th century British art history. You can see it in the context of this real fascination with retro design, but that period in British art, and also I think partly because of the Jubilee, has really kind of flagged up, you know, the 1950s, the Festival of Britain as well, these kind of key moments in the development of British cultural history. So, but I think for us, you know, it is really important to bring to the fore someone whose reputation has suffered, but who in the 50s and in the 60s was celebrated as one of Britain's most noteworthy artists, who was really known not only in this country but in America, was collected both in this country and the States, was being supported by the British Council. He exhibited at Venice at the Biennale and then at the Biennale in São Paulo in Brazil. So a huge reputation in this country. Well, why was it that, even during his lifetime, he lived until the late 1980s, why even during his lifetime there was this kind of sudden slackening of interest in his work, and not just his work, but also his contemporaries, and this also almost dismissiveness of this period of abstract painting in Britain, whereas in the States, of course, you know, championing Mark Rothko and Willem de Kooning, but somehow British abstraction has never always sat necessarily that comfortably with the art establishment. So for us, yes, of course, it's important when you're, you know, when an artist of quality is not really being shown or represented, it's a wonderful opportunity to do that. And I know that Scott, whilst he might have suffered at the hands of the art establishment in the 80s and 90s, I know that there are people who know his work, really love him. So there is a kind of like almost a cult of Scott out there, which it would be wonderful to draw on.
So What then would you say was Scott's kind of key contributions to maybe the development of British art, but also, I suppose, wider trends in art worldwide?
Well, I think what he has done so spectacularly well, looking, you know, taking a moment in this exhibition, is to see how he developed those kind of key genre of painting, you know, the still life, landscape and the figure, and develop them in such a way that they kind of metamorphose and they morph between each other. There's this shift. A still life can become a landscape and a figure can become a landscape. And it's quite an amazing thing to see the shift between those forms. Yet at the heart, and this was something which he very clearly stated, that he was so inspired by Braque and Picasso and their still lives, and you know their use of this iconic emblem of the guitar or whatever it happened to be, and he has done the same, but using very simple objects, really remembered from his childhood in Ireland, the frying pan, the saucepan, eggs, and you know fruit, fish on a plate. And even at his most abstract, you can still see those objects. They're still rooted in that tradition. So what makes him so unique? I think he, you know, of all Britain's abstract painters, I think his use of paint is so incredible. It's so sensuous and lavish. And that's not something you necessarily always see in British painting. And I think also just to see how he evolved. He was continuously developing this vocabulary of form. So you get in the 50s and 60s these very painterly works. But then, you know, in the 60s and 70s it shifts. So he thins the paint. The surface is very plain and these shapes become absolutely abstracted to their barest forms, and they kind of float across the painted surface. And I don't know of any other artist who's really kind of shifted so much within the space of their career and has kept this kind of liveliness and vibrance in their work whilst it's changed, but yet at the same time it's still rooted in the same tradition.
Okay, so with the show that's currently on at the moment, you've also got it coupled with the parallel exhibition of Haroon Mirza. I was just wondering, you know, as curators, did you kind of consider any parallels at all between their works, or are they kind of working just in completely different worlds?
Well, you know, we didn't, because that's not... Whilst sometimes we might do that deliberately, and particularly within the context of the building and the collections displays and Hepworth, sometimes we might look at artists who maybe share some correspondence there. But certainly we weren't necessarily looking at a correspondence between William Scott and Haroon Mirza. But I think what you find is, with William Scott, there's definitely a context here in relation to the collections displays and to Hepworth. And Haroon has done something, again, which is very site-specific, has responded to the building, to the architecture, quite explicitly in his work. However, it's very interesting, now that we're here and that the exhibitions are up, to think about their work together. I mean, I suppose, you know, to show William Scott, we are showing someone who was a pioneer artist at the height of their career. And we hope also, by showing Haroon Mirza, that again, we're, I suppose, in trend with that legacy, we believe that we are showing an artist who will have a significant impact on the development of 21st century British art. He's a really interesting figure in the art world. His light and sound installations are very sensory and maybe it invites you to use all your faculties of sense in appreciating his work. And I think that's something, actually, when you immerse yourself in William Scott's paintings, his paintings invite you to do the same. They are not merely paintings, they are sensory experiences. And also I think there is this kind of, with Haroon, that the pulsating nature of the compositions that he draws from the electrical charges and the transmissions that are so much part of his work. You look at Scott and you can kind of see the same sort of pulsing rhythms, particularly in his late abstract paintings of the 1970s. But it's always a dangerous thing to draw too many comparisons. However, I think in these spaces, I think they work wonderfully well together, either because they're incredibly contrasting, but also because they work so well in the space. They really talk to the architecture of the building, and in many ways, both artists also, Haroon has actually co-opted part of our collection within his display, so it seems very fitting.
Excellent. So I'm interested that you've kind of got, archival materials as part of the exhibition. And I was just wondering, to what extent you kind of see these as, artworks, or are they just, are you kind of doing what Haroon's doing in terms of using found archive objects out and displaying them within the exhibition setting, or is it as a kind of, a jumping point or whatever to experience these works in different ways, or is it just a kind of historical thing? Does that make sense?
I think it is just a historical thing. I mean, we've always tried to draw on the Wakefield art collection archive when we make our displays. It's a fascinating resource which, it doesn't get seen very, very much. And we've done it here. We've drawn on archive, but also the archive of the Scott Foundation and the Martha Jackson Archive, which is based at the University of Buffalo, just to draw out those connections between Scott and Wakefield through the Vision and Reality exhibition that Helen Kapp put on in 1956, and which Scott formed a part, and subsequently a work was acquired for the Wakefield Art Collection, but also between Scott and Hepworth and the exhibition that they shared with Francis Bacon in New York in 1954 at the Martha Jackson Art Gallery. I just think people are fascinated by making those connections and by reading correspondence, and certainly Helen Kapp and Martha Jackson, as both as female curators and art dealers, you can really read their personality through their letters. They're great things to read. And I think it's just always important to show a kind of biographical, historical context to artists that you're exhibiting. And there's some wonderful material to draw on for Scott in particular.